This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Former North Carolina Congressman Howard Coble died late last night at the age of 84. He was the state's longest-serving member of Congress. The Republican lawmaker spent 30 years representing the Triad area in North Carolina's 6th Congressional District. Before that, he was a representative in the North Carolina General Assembly. He was known for being accessible to his constituents, often remembering their names for years after just one meeting. His long career in politics ended with his retirement after serving 15 terms in Congress. We spoke with Congressman Coble at the Triad stage in Greensboro after he made that announcement last year to talk about his life in Washington. I asked him about his longevity as a congressman given his narrow victories in 1984 and 1986.
Probably accessibility. Constituents are demanding more accessibility from elected officials than was the case, say, 20 years ago. And I think those demands are justified. I think constituents have every right to expect to see their elected officials frequently. I recall, Frank, having talked with a guy, oh, this has been 25 years ago, who was thinking about running for Congress. And he came to me for my, quote, counsel and advice. And during the conversation, he said to me, he said, "I will say one thing at the outset. I will not ride in one damn parade." I said, "Well, sir, if I don't believe I would make that a campaign pledge." Because these towns, be they small or large, they're proud of their, particularly Christmas parades. So accessibility, I think, Frank,
yeah,
coupled with a good staff,
yeah,
a good, diligent, hardworking staff. If you don't have, I don't care how good you are as a congressman or elected official, if you don't have a good staff, you probably won't survive.
How did you get into politics? What got you interested in this?
An old time with Guilford County attorney, indeed the late N.D. McNary, Duke lawyer, but I forgave him for that long ago. He said, "Howard, we will never be able to establish a two-party government in North Carolina if we don't get people involved willing to run for office." See, back in those days, folks, you youngsters won't recall this, but back in those days, if the election was determined at the primary. If you prevailed in April or May, at one time it was in April back in those days, if you prevailed then as a Democrat, you were assured of being elected. Governor Holzhauser and I had the same conversation.
Republican Governor Holzhauser.
Yeah,
right.
The first one this that century,
that's
by
right,
the way.
Mm-hmm.
And we agreed that to establish a two-party government, you do need people on both sides nipping at each other's heels. Now, my mom and daddy were Democrats. I was reared a Democrat home. But you reach across the aisle. Now, a lot of folks don't like that. Oh, no, it's just compromise is weak, they say. Well, I think compromise is probably a necessary element to getting things done. Always perfect, no. Rarely, if ever, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, be flexible.
Reaching across the aisle is one of the hallmarks. The other is being able to stand up to your party when your party you felt was working against the interests of your district. A case in point would be the textile bill that Ronald Reagan approved that would have hurt, in your mind, the textile industry, and you opposed Ronald Reagan in your first term as congressman.
Wasn't too smart, maybe. but back then, when I was elected in 84, the bread and butter issues in our district were textiles, furniture, and tobacco. All three are beleaguered. Not ready to give up on them, Frank, but beleaguered as opposed to back then. Of course, there are some folks in the Congress who would like to put the final nail in the tobacco coffin. Well, I can't in good conscience do that because Lorillard is headquartered here in Greensboro, employ hundreds of employees. So that because it depends upon interpretation, I guess, in no small way.
Well, let me ask you about that one in particular, because in the textile industry, you have people working here. You can talk about the cost, where it's more efficient to produce and all of that. It becomes an economic question. In the case of tobacco, I'd love to talk with you about this. There's a public health issue involved here. It's the impact of tobacco smoking on individuals and therefore the cost of public health in general. And then you have a constituency who have jobs that depend on that industry. industry. Do you see your role as sort of protecting their jobs? Because there's a third way, which would be to find ways out into other industries. And you could use your position as a member of Congress to help them into another industry without the public health implications. I mean, how do you see a question like
that? That's a good point. It's very delicate and very fragile. This is how you get that done. But your point is not foolish.
That's the first time I've ever heard that from a member of, and that's from a member of Congress. So I,
Frank, when you mentioned textiles, I'd be remiss. My mama was a textile worker. She sewed pockets on overalls for the old Bluebell down on South Elm Street. So I know the significance of a textile check coming into a family. As I said earlier, my dad worked with the Belk store here in town.
Well, there's other questions too about. Holding to the party line. You know, your opponent, Robin Britt, accused you of flip-flopping. He said when you were in the North Carolina legislature, you approved abortion funding, and then when you went to Washington, you opposed it on the national scale. Was that a matter of you having to toe the line a little bit as a party member?
Probably. Probably so.
Well, there is an example of honesty among a politician. I have just completely revised my whole definition of a politician based on what you just said. What about that? Now, as you look back, what do you consider your greatest accomplishments?
Greatest accomplishment?
Yeah.
Probably some of the textile and furniture votes that came down on the side of domestic production. Mm. Someone asked me what was my most disappointment. And you may come into this, Frank, before you, but upon my first election, I said that I would not participate in the congressional pension. That was not my most brilliant financial decision. but I felt that taxpayers pay my salary. I don't think you should be saddled with a plush congressional retirement fund. And it is indeed plush.
So what about that polarization? That's the other issue. When these issues come up now, the Republicans are in control of both houses, but not the White House. And we hear more and more about the trouble that we believe we're in a polarized environment. It's harder to get things done. You've been there for 30 years. Has it changed since you were there?
Yes, it has, but not as profoundly as the media would have you believe. I don't mean to be point accusatory finger at the media. But I guess that's what I'm doing.
Get your finger out of my chest, yeah, Congressman.
Finger out of your eye.
it was ever thus, huh? It was always been this or it seems more polarized because it gives us all something to talk
more
about.
Polarized, but not some of my best friends up there are Democrats. In fact, I had a good constituent friend of mine. She said, someone told me that you like Steny Hoyer. Steny Hoyer, of course, for the benefit of you who may not know, is the Democrat whip, third in line in the Congress. I said, I regard Steny Hoyer as a very good friend of mine. She said, well, if you like Steny Hoyer, I guess I'll have to like him. I said, well, that's the kind of argument I like to engage in.
You can win that every time. How do you see the Republican Party addressing this split? I mean, certainly they did. Between 2010 and 2012, it seemed to torpedo the party in 2010. Far-right candidates who lost races that most people expected Republicans to win. That didn't happen in 2012, so maybe Republicans have fixed it?
Well, going back to what you said, if we don't fix it, we may be at the gate out of town. So our marching orders are laid out for us, it seems to be. And I think another change, Frank, involves the fact that we are now, as a practical matter, a two-party state. Two Republican senators, 12 Republican members of the House. I can recall when there was only one House member, Raper Jonas. From Lincoln County, only one Republican.
What is tell us more about the highlights in your 30 years.
Well, let me tell you a highlight that's unfavorable. I was reared in rural Guilford County, and I have always had problems embracing vehicular traffic. Some 4 or 5 years ago, I was being driven to the Washington airport by one of my staffers from rural Randolph County, which is more rural than Guilford County. And she's negotiated the Washington traffic much better than I have. But on this particular day, it was 95 degrees temperature, wall-to-wall traffic on the way to the airport. And I said to her, I said, I wouldn't live in this town. She said, you do live in this town. But you don't think of Washington as being home.
That's part of my conversation with former Congressman Howard Cobalt, recorded last year in Greensboro. Congressman Cobalt died last night. He served North Carolina's 6th Congressional District for 30 years. There's a link to the entire interview at our website, stateofthings.org. There's more ahead on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.